Good morning. This is the Chorus Call operator. Welcome to Generalfinance presentation of full year results 2022. Let me remind you that all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, a Q&A session will be held. The presentation is available on the site www.generalfinance.it. Clicking on the relevant link. If you want to take part in the conference call, press star and zero. Let me turn it over to Mr. Giannoli, CEO of Generalfinance. Thank you very much. Good morning to all of you. Let me start by introducing the first 2022 data. We start from the turnover. That is showing a strong growth, and it's growing meaningfully. 2020 was closed with 761 million, 2022 with 2,009,000,000, with a CAGR of 62% year on year. 2009 million, and as a delta, there's an increase year on year of 43% from 2021 to 2022. And this is very meaningful because of the backdrop we worked against to achieve them. And our business is anti-cyclical, and we showed high profitability because our net profit, net income adjusted, was in excess of 12 million euro. And we had a 2022 CAGR was up 51% and a year-on-year delta of 27% between 2021 and 2022. That again is a very strong growth considering the size of our company and the turnover we managed to deliver. That is a very meaningful piece of information, and that was on page 7 of the presentation. Let me share something else with you, something that is distinctive of our operations. We have a low risk profile, as you can see on page 8 of our presentation. We have a gross NPE, which is between 2021 and 2022 was around 4.2%, and in 2021 it was 0.24 for General Finance, and in 2022 was 0.35%, whilst the market gross NPE was 4.2%, and cost of risk went from 0.02 in 2021 to 0.07 in 2022. Those are also very important factors. Our gross NPE is lower, practically is one-tenth lower than the market average. The cost of risk adjusted, net of insurance premiums, all of our loans are covered with an Allianz trade insurance policy, so adjusted is still 0.02 in 2021 and 0.04 in 2022. That means we have a very high asset quality, and that is indeed a distinctive feature again of our company. Let's move on to page 10. This is focusing on default rate. That is also a very important item. From 2018, it went from 0.54. This is a snapshot spanning 5 years. And it proves that from 0.54, we landed at 0.06 in 2022. And between 2020 and 2022, during the pandemic and lockdown, and despite the Russia-Ukraine war, so we granted a consistent decline starting from 2018, 2019 to 2022, and that really bears witness to the fact that we have been working well and we have very high asset quality. The gross NPE ratio shows the same decline starting from 2018 to 2022. So 2.19 in 2018, 1.21 in 2019, again declining, and proves the quality of our assets. We have the short duration in our risk profile. Look at the picture. The DSOs goes from 79 to 73, the days of sales outstanding, and therefore a lower duration improves. We have maximized efficiency and we have reduced risk, and that again is very meaningful. And we have gradually reduced loans with a residual life in excess of 40 days. You see, we go from 14% in 2021 to 9% at the end of 2022. So residual life lower than 3 months. On page 12, we see another key picture. Our 40th anniversary was celebrated in 2022, and again, we focus on collection and how we manage loans, and this is beneficial to both our clients and ourselves. We are market leaders when it comes to playing ahead of the curve. So when there is overdue payments, and also when we select portfolios that have a duration with a low, medium to low DSO level. As you can see on the slide, the percentage of loans above 90 to 120 days is higher, or higher than 120 days. You see, the market is 1.0 times what we instead have recorded within General Finance. And on the right-hand side of the slide, you can see these are the payment delays. 90% of General Finance's portfolio of transferred loans and credits, transferred receivables, are cashed in on the day of maturity. This is something I really focus on, and the whole of General Finance focuses on, because we make a big effort to analyze the acquisition of the items we have in our portfolio, and then the collection ability and capacity that leads to greater efficiency, because we only have to focus on the residual 10%, which is the remaining part of loans that are cashed, or receivables that are cashed in after maturity, within the following 60 days. And it's interesting to see that we have 90%, whilst the market has 20% in the same type of loans. So managing, picking the right loans, like right receivables, and the general approach we have, and we are an outsourcer of the transferor. So that really leads to excellent results when it comes to collection. Page 13, again, this is a snapshot of our business model. Let me remind you, for those of you who maybe knows us well, but those who do not know us very well, let me tell you about the fundamentals that we run on when it comes to running our business. And we normally focus on companies, on debtors that have very low banking rating and are in a position to have to face a turnaround in their debt structure through instruments for bankruptcy procedure or for agreements with the debtors. These are the clients that have a low rating and who are operating and servicing customers, or whose customers instead are have very good asset quality. You see, these are the assigned debtors. The central pie at the top of the screen shows that. That's the 41% and 44%, that is summing up altogether of assigned debtors. The rating class of these assigned debtors is either class 1 or class 2. They are very positive when it comes to their rating class. Our clients, the transferors, the sellers, so to say, are placed in an area where bankruptcy procedures are accompanied somehow, are supported, but they take place in a protected environment. And another distinctive factor is the without recourse activity, the pro solvendo or without recourse operations and activities. It's 91% of our turnover. So with recourse, sorry, pro solvendo. And it could be, it's data that you can find on the Assifact site. The without recourse or pro soluto factoring, we have a very low, it's 9%, accounts for 9%, versus 78%, that would be market data. 80% of our loans is covered by an insurance policy, a credit insurance policy that enables us, should the payment not take place, to be indemnified by the insurance company. Something very important in the with recourse operations or items is that you can reach up to 83% of the LTV in that was we did in 2022. We have a high portfolio diversification, and we work both with Italian and foreign debtors. And a breakdown, just to show you a comparison with market data, is about 10 times the average, because 10 is the Assifact average, versus 83 assigned debtors per seller, so to say. And that is a very important ratio. On page 14, as we announced a few months ago, you see the new organization chart. We have performed a number of actions that were aimed at having a better and better risk control, and to be able to have full control over our business as well. Figures are very meaningful, and also the business plan is indeed challenging. The number of transactions, and I'll tell you more about it in a minute, is very meaningful. So having a control over risk is of paramount importance to us. That's why we invested to have an internal audit person in charge, well, a person in charge of internal audit, a person who is very much acquainted with this type of operations, and we have separated that from the risk area. We've separated the AML and SOS compliance area, was separated from the legal department as well, where it had initially been placed. We also stripped off the CLO business line, or and whatever deals with or has to do with operations is also on its own. And we have a standalone department for portfolio monitoring, and under the CLO, while reporting this to the CLO, we have a constant portfolio monitoring. We move to page 15. Let's talk figures again. The digital platform. We started investing in our proprietary digital platform in 1996. It's been fully remodeled ever since 1996. It evolved sizably, and so we have a lot of transactions and operations that take place automatically. They are fully automated, so we can manage a large number of customers thanks to our platform, starting from a number of sellers, more than 220. And for these sellers, we have managed 10,338 transfers in a fully automated way, and that generated 11,440 disbursements in a fully digital way and 7,726 automatic settlements. Once the collection takes place, you see, that was the 83% of the transactions of the amounts we mentioned before. It's 83% of the total amounts that are disbursed. We managed 334,000 invoices, and we cashed in debts from, well, 19,406 assigned debtors. We generated more than 150,000 notifications in an automated way. As I said, we have a proprietary system. It was a big investment from a digital perspective, and it enables us to invest in our front web, that is general web. It's the platform through which our customers access information. They sell their receivables, and they have incoming flows. Then we have TOR, TOR, that's the back end in our company. And then what we added is the data analytics portion, are the following layers. This universe talks to the treasury modules, to the accounting module, to the SQL servers, and it gathers information from the client universe, from the customer's universe, from the info provider world, and through TOR, it can manage automated responses, replies to most loan requests or credit facility requests. Let me hand it over to our CFO, Mr. Colombo, for the figures.
Thank you, Massimo. Good morning, everyone. Let me give you some details on the economic performance and the asset data before we take your questions. So we're looking at page 17, and here we're presenting the major adjustments we made on the actual 2022 figures. These adjustments are totally connected to the IPO process, and so in terms of operating costs, they account for 1.6 million euros, besides a normalization of the tax rate, which means the net profit will go from 10.9 to 12.1, adjusted, considering important costs, which are mainly due to consultants and to IPO-related expenses that had an impact on the income statement of 2022. Page 18 shows the main KPIs in the business adjusted to get rid of the extraordinary impacts I just mentioned. So the profit is 27% adjusted. On the top part of the slide, it's important to point out that the net profit and the interest margin dynamics is fully in line with the previous 3 years. So the growth is in line with CAGR from 20 to 22. The operating cost is about 18%. So the capability of the company to grow is confirmed. In terms of revenues, we are growing much quicker than costs grow. And also, we do that in a situation in which the company keeps investing in its people, as we've seen in the new organizational chart. And we keep investing in IT, in particular our proprietary platform. Now, as far as revenues are concerned, There's an effect which is quite interesting, which is the drop in DSO, which is actually going in line with the interest margin's performance. So 29 versus 34 means that DSO is lower. And so in the second half of the year, the interest margin was slightly lower than originally expected. Indicators, we see in the central part of the slide. There's a couple of numbers I'd like to comment on here. The first is the cost-income ratio, which is dropping further. It's under 40% on an adjusted basis again, and this is the first time in our history. And it's important, once again, to point out that in 3 years, thanks to the scale effect, we did manage to reduce the cost-income ratio by over 10%. The ROE, of course, requires adjustments because of a bigger asset base, thanks to the 20 million we cashed in at the IPO. So the drop year-over-year is mainly due to the fact that the asset base is larger. And in any case, we'll close this financial year with over 26% ROE, which makes us amongst the leaders in our industry in terms of profitability, and we still stand well above the cost of capital. Total assets is now 440 million euros. Page 19 shows the assets and liabilities in detail. So we always try to point out that this balance sheet is very simple, very straightforward. So we have two main items: financial assets, which is mainly credits and the amortized cost for 385 billion, besides the cash and cash equivalents, which is a kind of stock we need to perform disbursements. And the financial liabilities that stand at 368 million. So there's no major change here. All we see here is connected to our operations and to our business. And in particular, as far as assets are concerned, the tangible assets are 5 million euros, invariant throughout the year, whereas 2 million is intangible assets, which is virtually the amortized part of the proprietary platform. During this financial year, we did go through amortization. In particular, the total capital ratio is about 18%. It's more than twice the minimum as per regulations. And for general finance, the requirements are determined by CRR. So the minimum requirement is 8% total capital ratio and 4.5% for CET1 ratio. So the buffer we can count on is about 10 percentage points, which means we can actually look with great optimism at the next 2 or 3 years because we have the financial ability to sustain a very sharp growth path. As you see on the left-hand side, RWA is invariant as measured in RWA density versus total assets. So it still stands at 78%. Page 20 shows some details about funding. So the top part of the slide shows the debt, which the funding and cost of funding, which increases by 17%. We use more securitization, which is actually higher than the RCF line, and now stands at 135 million. As you see on the pie chart on the right, the funding breakdown is mainly done at variable rates. In particular, securitization is indexed at 1 month, and the other instruments are Euribor 3 months, and then we have a subordinated bond at fixed rates and not much else at fixed rates. So the funding is almost all variable rates. Something I'd like to point out is the robust funding position you see in the bottom part of the slide. So total funding available is 840 million. In particular, 500 million are the maximum capacity of senior financing from securitization, which has been implemented as we went with the entrance of Banco BPM as well, which has been finalized at the end of 2022. So the financial debt is 370 million and 44 million of liquidity. So that means that the counterbalancing overall is in excess of 500 million. So also in terms of total funding, We are totally covered vis-à-vis the business plan up to 2024, and we do also have some leeway to manage any business which might exceed our expectations, which is really important. Something else I'd like to put out is that a large part of that funding is committed, in particular the RCF line, which is going to mature at the beginning of 2025, securitization, which is a three-year plan subject to yearly renewal, the bond and other contracts that all have a kind of a short-term duration. So we should point out that over time, the company always tried to transform its funding into a committed component to provide more stability to the financing platform. Page 21 shows net interest income. It's hedged against interest rate rises in case there are future further rises of ECB and Euribor rates. So the funding is almost all variable rate. And today, as you see on the third bullet point, 98%, so that means virtually all of the contracts, are now calculated in variable interest rates based on Euribor at 3 months. So from the beginning of 2022 onwards, the spread is locked in, it's frozen. So even if there were to be further interest rate increases, we expect no negative impacts from that. Actually, for 2023, by using funding, by using securitization that has a spread of 110 basis points versus 160 of pool financing, so we expect the cost of funding to decrease even further as far as the spread is concerned. So we expect a bigger gap than the 2 percentage points we had in 2022. Page 22 shows the details on the net commission income. This is the large part of our margin. So we are outsourcers of credit. So from this viewpoint, the capability of the company to extract commissions from the services it's providing, which are high value-added services, is very important. So we are less dependent than the market average from the net interest income or the fluctuations of interest rates. So if we look at the commission income, the percentage on turnover is virtually stable, and passive commissions are also stable throughout the last 3 years. What we call passive commissions are or interest payments are including also the expenses we sustain for insurance policies. So interest payments and insurance policies are the two main sources of negative interest. So page 23 shows the detailed costs. We anticipated the reduction of the cost-income ratio by over 10 percentage points in 3 years. And in particular, this year, we reduced the cost-income ratio by another 3 percentage points. And this happened in a year when we invested substantially in people. Our headcount grew from 53 to 63 FTEs, so that accounts for a large chunk of the personnel cost increase from 5.2 to €6.5 million. We invested over €1 million in our proprietary platform, and partially that will be reflected in amortization in the cost structure. Other administrative expenses are also going up. And of that 29%, a large part is due to personnel cost for the financing platform and the cost of securitization system, which is under other administration expenses in our P&L. And part of that is due to the costs related to the platform, and in particular cybersecurity and cloud security, which had a major impact in 2022 on the cost line, on the cost items. So the final datum which confirms our growth is the reduction of cost-income ratio with the expansion of the business and bigger investments we're planning to have in the near future. So I stop here and give it back to Massimo.
We're on page 25 of the presentation. At the top of the slide, you see how the share performed starting from the 29th of June 2022until today. It's been quite flat price-wise, valuation-wise, and the net profit is €10,885,388.87. The dividend per share is €0.43 per share. And the payout ratio is 50% as disclosed in our business plan. And the dividend yield is around 6%. If you move to the next page, you will see the main points, the highlights for 2022. It was a complex year indeed, and we are very happy with the results achieved. So we went the IPO way, first and foremost, and thanks to the rights issue, we increased our total capital ratio, and so we could finally update, enhance our business plan and achieve a sustainable growth, supported by the figures I mentioned and the funding reserve in excess of 500 million euro. And we closed the year with a business growing strongly, and that, of course, makes us confident as to what will happen going forward. And let me focus on the excellent asset quality. Those are all factors of paramount importance for 2022. 2023 opened with against the backdrop of financial tensions, so geopolitical and macroeconomic tensions, also in the world of credit. And corporates, of course, are more and more in need to dispose of their credits. And we turn to companies that have very limited access to the bank loans or bank lending facilities. And if you couple all of these features with how the state aids are going to be stopped in 2023, or the financing through the MCC and SACE is something that has to be factored in. That is, companies will need more and more to dispose of their receivables and somehow optimize how they manage their working capital and cash flows. We've started the year with many new customers turning to us. And also, talking about the business plan, a few months we gave you some guidance, and we think we can reconfirm that guidance, and we can also confirm our net income guidance that will be ranging between 16 and 17 million. And as we had disclosed during the previous conference call, we started looking at expanding abroad. We looked into two countries mainly, with specific reasons behind it, because we think those are the countries that could prove more satisfactory when it comes to exporting our model. And it's Greece and Spain we're talking about. We started looking into that. We started looking into technical and legal matters to be able to make an informed decision in the coming months. So in the next 3 to 4 months, we should be able to complete our study, our analysis, and see whether we can actually export the general finance model to these two countries. So far, we do not have specific figures to look into these to support the projections I mentioned. I think that's it from our side. Myself and Ugo Colombo are ready to take your questions. This is the Chorus Call operator. Let us now start the Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, press star and one on your phone headset. on your phone, and if you want to be removed from the queue, press star and two on your phone. Use your handsets to ask questions. If you want to ask a question, press star and one now. First question comes from the line of Manuela Meroni with Intesa San Paolo. Go ahead, madam.
Good morning. Thanks for your presentation. I have four questions. So the first is about DSO. The DSO has decreased throughout the year from 79 days to 75 days at the end of 2022. So I was wondering, why do you have this trend? Did you have an impact on the profitability of the fourth quarter from that? And what should we expect for 2023? Also, I was wondering whether you are prepared to give some guidance on the turnover for 2023. Second question is about your income. I think I understand that starting in 2023, you will be able to transfer 100% of the increase of interest rates on your assets and on your client business. So I'm wondering whether my perception is real. Then I have another question about costs that have increased, especially in the fourth quarter. So what should we expect from the recurring costs in the next few quarters? The final question is about your capital structure. It's very robust, very sound. But once again, I was wondering whether you have any seasonal effects on your cost structure, or whether you can tell us what we can expect in terms of costs for the next few quarters. Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Meroni, for your questions. Let me take questions one and two, and then the CFO would answer questions three and four. But actually, Ugo, do feel free to chip in and add anything you may feel is useful. So DSO. DSO is something that can be seen, as I anticipated, as a source of concerns, because if it keeps decreasing, we'll decrease our revenues as well. However, it's a source of efficiency from many points of view, because we reduce the risks and we cash in our credit much quicker. So a very important element and a very relevant element that should be kept under control at all times. Of course, the DSO, so the days of sale outstanding and the days of payment of the individual invoices may be somehow guided by the factoring company by working in different mixes in terms of different industries and different payment systems. So certainly, the bigger size of the clients that work with General Finance now also had an impact, because larger and better structured clients in turn serve bigger and more structured clients. So when we were looking at the ratings of the assigned debtors earlier, we saw that over 80% of our assigned debtors are sharp green, bright green. So, of course, that means the payment systems they use are in line with that situation. So the assigned debtors are very well structured, and the sellers are very well structured too. DSO is constantly under control. We are persuaded that we are not yet at the lowest possible point. We're working to acquire new portfolios and to actually propose to our clients some activities which will actually complete the current offer we have, the current disposal offer we have. We can actually have access to funding, which is very important, which will help us re-establish DSO. Of course, our turnover, so the bigger turnover, is another key element for us. So it's not just a question of the number of days that's really important, but also the amount of turnover is just as important. So both elements, so the controlling guidelines about new acquisitions in the portfolios and good performance on growth and the potential coming from bigger turnovers make us pretty confident about the guidelines for 2023. The issue of income and variable rates, well, I can confirm that today variable rates account for 99% of our sellers. So the guidelines that the CFO was describing earlier are going to give very good results anytime soon, because we have been able to actually implement our plans and to reach our goals by December 31st. I'm sure you remember that we are a kind of a bespoke boutique company. We have a connection with our our debtors. That's a very personal one-on-one relationship with every single one of them. So we didn't want to shock them or to impose any overcomplicated measure to them. So the 4 months we needed to get to covering 100% with variable rates allowed us to negotiate with our clients, to talk to them, to review and renegotiate the duration of our lines with them. So it's been a consulting arrangement, and it's something we have agreed with our debtors on a one-on-one basis. So that's why it took us a few more months. That meant slightly lower income, but at the same time, we kept good relationship with all our clients. We actually strengthened them and extended them further. So these are my answers to your first and second question. I hope I answered you, and let me now yield the floor to Ugo to answer your other two questions. And, of course, please feel free to come back with any further questions.
As to cost of risk, Q4 should not be taken as a benchmark for the run rate levels, because it was only impacted by one default event, and that default event was referred to one debtor only, and it was slightly affected by the Russia-Ukraine war, and it was a special case, and it was one of the transactions that was fully hedged through the insurance policy we have with Allianz Trade, and that's how it was €700,000 of default, and €500,000 was covered, so we got that back, and that was a one-off, and the range was around 4 basis points. That was the organic cost of risk, natural cost of risk, that is in line with what we've seen over the last couple of years. And let me take this opportunity to say that also the exposure to debtors in Ukraine, Russia and Belarus is almost zero set. At the end of 2021 now it's less than €200,000 from 2021, and it was one special position. It was a foreign debtor, but fully hedged, fully covered, and it was a non-recurring item, a one-off item, therefore. As to the capital soundness, indeed, the declining witness was tied in with the increase in credits, and this business, as you well know, is very much related to how the turnover goes month by month. In Q4, we had a higher turnover for a number of reasons. We had transactions without recourse that normally are concentrated at the end of the year, compared to September, where it was 295 million total RWA. In December, it was around 345. So a 15% increase, very meaningful, and totally driven by the turnover volume. In December, we had an increase in turnover of more than, it was about 200 million. And then in between September and December, we closed at 77% RWR density between RWA loans and receivables. So there were no major changes in that respect. You have to bear in mind that as to the operating results in December, you calculate RWA based on operating risk. Over the last 3 years, it was 15%. Over the last year, as we've grown a lot, we had a higher net banking income. So RWA on operating risk is normally higher in December because there's a higher profitability to be factored in thanks to the net interest income or the net banking income. But that is something that is tied in with the rules and regulations. We have to compute that by the end of December. Let me remind you that if you want to ask a question, you can press star and one on your phone.
If you have further questions, please press star one now. The next question is a follow-up from Emanuela Meroni of Intesa San Paolo. Please. Ms. Meroni, you have the floor. Yeah, follow-up question about GSO in 2023 versus 2022. Sorry, we cannot hear you. I'm sorry, we hardly hear you at all. Would you please repeat? Yeah, GSO in 2023, can it be higher than in 2022? We have reviewed the guidelines in the budget, which we approved a few days ago at the Board of Directors meeting. We actually confirmed that net income is anywhere between 16 and 17 million. And as compared to November, the turnaround of the portfolio is much quicker and the mix is slightly different too. So the DSO we have now is in line with that figure of 73 we have seen in the slides, which was the average in 2022. So I agree with Massimo just said, of course, it may go back and be more in line with what we had in the last few years, so anywhere between 80 and 85 days, also depending on the new acquisitions of debtors with longer maturities. Conservatively, we decided to decrease it versus the original plan, which was 85, and so we're going to be near the figures of 2022. So we want to be very conservative here in our profitability estimates, and we want to keep the guidance we gave you for 2023. And it's more or less what we've seen throughout January. Then, of course, we still have to remember what Massimo just said. So we do have a relevant pipeline of new sellers, which may give a positive contribution and go back to 80 days, which was the average in the last 3 or 4 years. It's very clear. Thank you. This is the operator again. Please let me remind you that if you have questions, you can press star one on your phone now. Next question from Giuseppe Federico Palmieri of Almus Capital, please. Mr. Palmieri, you have the floor. Sorry, I was muted. Can you hear me now? Yes, good morning. Good morning, and thanks for your presentation. Now, I have a question on
the forecast of labor and the headcount for 2023. So you now have 63 FTEs. What's your expectation for the headcount for next year, for this year, for 2023?
Yes, okay. We now have 63 employees. We hired 10 people in the previous year. Considering new hires that have already been shown at slide 14, the plan expects us to go up to 70 people, 70. So, of course, we have a very limited amount of highly qualified human resources. General finance is a business where the value of human resources and of the proprietary platform are actually attaching more importance to people's quality and not quantity. So it's really important for us to hire highly qualified resources. As I said, we're a kind of a bespoke boutique, and we want the people to help us do that properly. Thank you. Thank you for your question. There are no further questions so far. Very good, then. So if there are no questions, I think we can thank everyone for your time, and let me thank all of you for organizing this morning's session as well. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.